Let's welcome in the team, and hello to you, Mickey McGowan.
G'day, Gareth.
A little bit happening in the last 48 hours, especially. It's been a big week, really, in football news anyway.
It has, and more so about the two clubs in Melbourne that are widely regarded as two of the biggest clubs in the land, that being Collingwood and Carlton.
It was an interesting stat on the Breakfast Club this morning, Adam White, that you were discussing with Daniel Harford in the early part of the show regarding how many coaches AFL clubs have been through. I think the stat went back to 1987.
Yeah, it did.
Yep.
And Collingwood has had the least amount of coaches of all since 1987. And it kind of makes it, Mickey, an attractive option for someone, knowing that they have a history of backing their coaches in. Now, they've either had favourite sons in Tony Shaw or Nathan Buckley, or high-profile people in Mick Malthouse or Lee Matthews, but that's the four they've had in a long, long time.
Yeah, stability is really important as far as I'm concerned in a footy club, and if you are given the portfolio of coaching a footy club, let the coach coach. As soon as you sort of transgress from that portfolio and you want to get involved in administration or the running of the club, I think that's where a lot of people, even at local footy, don't get it right. But in Collingwood's case, with Lee, who I was fortunate enough to have as my coach for the majority of my career, he certainly served the club magnificently, took us to the Holy Grail to win a premiership in 1990. And then Shorey, obviously one of the best captains I ever have seen in footy, but also played under. It was great to see him be given an opportunity. It didn't end up well for him as a coach. But in saying that, he's a Collingwood person through and through. And obviously, the big coup was Mick Malthouse to probably get a group of misfits in a way, no-namers, to a grand final against what we now widely regard as one of the best eras of footy with the Brisbane Lions team. And then obviously to get to 2010 and win a flag. And then one of the most revered figures in the Collingwood history, Nathan Buckley as a player, but also the integrity and the grace and the respect he exited yesterday was something to behold.
How would you describe him as a coach, Nathan Buckley, over his 10 years in charge?
At times a contradiction, because I felt as a creative player, I felt there was none better to play with or watch and observe from the grandstands, because he made things happen before anyone else knew they were about to. But as a coach, and I wrote a piece earlier this year, get back to that, because I'd like to see more offensive flair within an instinct within the Collingwood makeup. And he went probably away from what he was good at as a player, and that's have a defend first mentality. And I thought at times it went too far one way, and that was the defensive way. And that's the reason why I think Collingwood people who love to watch their team play but also to score become a bit restless in the end.
Who should be coach of the Collingwood Football Club, Mick?
I haven't got a firm opinion on that. I just want Collingwood to get the best person available they think fits this profile of the group they've got. They'll be searching the net. Do they need a tried and true? Historically, they say that Collingwood would go down that path. A lot's been said about Ross Lyon and Alistair Clarkson. Watching Ross Lyon last night, some would think that he's in the frame, but others would think he looks comfortable in the media chair now, but also with his commercial connection to real estate. Michael Voss is a name that I think he will clearly be interviewed, because I think there's growth in him as a person and as a coach since he was sacked at Brisbane, I think, in 2013. And in that period of time, he's worked in a very successful organisation like the Port Adelaide Football Club, who've been around the mark. But I think he's probably adjusted his thought processes on building relationships, on the way the game should be played. And I think sometimes your humility gets pricked in a way from the status you were held in when you do get sacked, and I reckon he'd be a far better coach second time around.
This is a serious question, Mick. Would you consider putting your hand up?
No. I've said that
Why
publicly.
Not?
Oh, it just doesn't interest me.
Yeah.
I'm more involved in the richness of local footy, what it provides, the dreams that come along with it. If the right person become available to coach the senior team and he asked me to be an assistant, that might be a different conversation.
Because I think there's many people, White, and you've worked a long time with Mick and he's worked with us, but especially what he does in the Herald Sun. And there's many Collingwood supporters, especially on social media, that would love for Mick to head back to Collingwood?
Well, I think I've known Mickey for 20 years, and I think every time I see him, which has been a lot over the years, almost every time I say, when are you going to go back to Collingwood and be an assistant coach? Because I know you'll never be a senior coach at AFL level, because you don't want to be. But I think it would be absolutely crazy if Collingwood don't reach out to you, or the new senior coach doesn't reach out to you and say, would you like to be involved in some capacity? Because your football brain speaks for itself. But the way and the respect that you've got from people at Collingwood, I think whoever it is that is senior coach, to have you as part of that coaching team, it just has to happen.
Yeah, I appreciate those words, Whitey, but you get to a stage in your life and you say, well, what stimulates you? And obviously the game of footy is dear to my heart. It's been great for me. And I really love the ability to teach and educate. And I'm more the kinesthetic coach. I can't turn a computer on.
Yeah, but you'd have this. Yeah,
in this lifestyle of emails and all that, it's a bit foreign to all.
Could you do the Mark Williams job that he's doing at Melbourne?
Oh, no doubt I can do that stuff. That's just bread and butter stuff as far as I'm concerned, because Choco's great. He's hands-on. He's demanding. He's passionate. He's logical in a lot of things that he says. He's different in other things that he does. But he's got a love for the game, just like I have. And you just never know where it takes you sometimes, life. But at the end of the day, I've sort of made a path for what I enjoy, and I really love developing kids and giving them a chance to live the dream. I think we've had 12 players that have gone and lived the dream at AFL level, and we've helped grow them, develop them, teach them, emphasise how you should be if you want to live the dream of becoming an AFL footy out of the Keilor Footy Club. I've been there 13 years now, and I just love the nursery that we provide for the betterment of them to become great people, but also an opportunity to be the footballer they want to become. So I get a great satisfaction at that, but notwithstanding that, I still watch a lot of AFL footy because it's a part of what I'd love to do from the media aspect, give insights to what should be said. I don't think a lot of people say what they really should say because they're worried about affecting someone's skin. But I'm always about being upfront and honest. Let your eyes tell the true story. I'll never actually cast aspersion about another game, another player, if I haven't seen instances myself. I learnt that as a young person. Your own eyes are your best form of judgment, and that's when you can have some sort of opinion-based discussion about what you see. But I think a lot of people in the footy media right now are reluctant to hit people up between the eyes because of the fluff that's associated with a lot of conversation.
I often say, Gareth, that most assistant coaches now turn up with an iPad or a laptop to training. Mickey would come up with an exercise book and a biro and a football. And
that's fair.
How they do it.
No, that's fair. And I think over time you create a lot of bank of knowledge too, Whitey and Gareth. It's just like you guys doing what you do, and you do it well because a lot of things you're passionate about, you research, you look, you learn, you retain information, and sometimes you just need to revert to that bank of knowledge on instinct sometimes. And little things in game of footy, you say to yourself, well, why isn't this happening now? And 5 minutes into the first quarter, you see things that others don't see. And all of a sudden, 15 minutes into the third quarter, they might do what you would have done two quarters ago. And there's the change within the game. It could have happened an hour ago, and that could have been the difference between winning and losing. So if I think there's one strength that I probably like to think that I've got, is that I read the game really quickly and make decisions on the run because of that.
Hey, Mick, from Collingwood to Carlton, there's a review happening in all departments of their footy setup. There was talk that even this, the incoming president, Luke Sayers, has been having a chat to some players talking about how they think it's all going there at the Blues. How do the Blues get out of the trouble that they're in a way?
Oh, I think the players have got to take accountability for a lot with what's going on. I just don't reckon they're hard enough. And guys, you do a great job in getting prominent players from clubland on, and we had Sam Doherty talking about where they were tracking 4 weeks ago, and I remember sitting in this very chair.
He pulled out this week, didn't he?
And I actually questioned with what he said, because I thought there was too much language around excuses. And as far as I'm concerned, this AFL landscape, when you're a leader of your organisation and things aren't going to plan, you've got to stop the rot. It's more about actions, and right from the captain right through to any player that represents the Carlton Football Club on any given day, they've got to learn to fight with greater intensity and effort than what they're currently doing. that West Coast loss was damaging. And that's the reason why the review's taking place on the back of that result. There's no question about that. But even the week before, in terms of what we've all saw and all spoke about throughout the course of this year, a huge part of the discussion has been how leaky they are in defence. Their team defence is non-existent. Players don't want to be selfless. They don't want to be sacrificial. They don't want to play a role that helps that team defence structure. And the other side of the coin is when you look at the first quarter, and I just hope people are listening, they can get on their AFL app, go to round 11, first game, first centre bounce in that Sydney Swans game. I look up at the screen, I see the Indigenous fella blowing his didgeridoo. Straight away, the camera then goes to the halfback line of Carlton. And I look at Michael Gibbons and I say, wow, this is interesting. Spitter mentality. Start halfback, spit through the centre bounce in a 6-6-6 formation. That's an attacking mindset cell. Because then I looked to the wing and I saw the thumbs up. And I thought, well, here we go. Get your mind into overdrive. Who's on the wing? Zach Williams. He's going to replace him. Look in front of the ball. Who's half forward? Who's going to replace... Who's that half forward's going to replace Williams on the wing? It's Sam Doherty. So all of a sudden, with that mindset, up goes the ball. Sinclair gets a free kick. Handballs to Jake Lloyd. Gibbons, who starts on Heaney, works a back 45 away from where Gibbons was running because he was rolling the dice. Heaney gets an easy uncontested mark forward 50, turns, rolls, gives it to Haywood within 42 seconds as a goal against. That's an attacking mindset of rolling the dice in the first centre bounce of a game that they must win. So I just feel at times David Teague has to be responsible, but also the players have to be responsible to have a more stringent defensive mindset on the back of what's letting them down right now. And that's an example of where their mindset was in that game. Let's roll the dice. Gibbons spit forward. Williams gets back to cover. Doherty comes up to play wing cover. And all of a sudden, they give a free kick away in the centre bounce and there's a goal against them in 42 seconds a game because they didn't have that shoring up the defence mentality and having a real hard edge about their mindset about defend first.
Can you change that? Sorry, Wally. Can you change that habit?
Oh, of course you can.
Yeah.
You've got to sell it.
Yeah.
So, because no doubt going into the game, there was a rolling of the dice mentality to say, well, this is the tricks that we're going to play, the innovation we'll put in place. I love innovation. If they're four down, do it. Try to find a way to get back into the game by the element of surprise. But the first centre bounce in a game that everyone's questioned their integrity about defence, I just don't understand that.
So, Mickey, then we go to the last quarter in both games against Sydney and then against West Coast, where... particularly against West Coast, their season was on the line and they looked like, and it's just a perception, they looked like they didn't have the desire, the passion, the hunger for the contest, the appetite to compete with so much on the line. Who, there's never one person, but who is essentially responsible for that lack of urgency, intensity?
Oh, I don't think you can pin... I don't think you can actually put the finger on one player.
Is it structurally or is it attitude?
Oh, it's attitude. Attitude drives effort.
Yeah.
And effort is a cornerstone to every successful team or footballer. If you've got no effort and you are off by 5%, you become the victim very quickly in this game. It swallows you up. It consumes you. But when you look at the Blues' contest numbers, their contest possession differential's 14th in the comp. Now, they had expectations about being a top eight team. That tells me, and we've got a good sample size right now, they're not up for the contest often enough. Their grand ball diff, they're 15th in the comp. They don't hunt the footy. They think they do, but they don't. And as I've said time and time again, Carlton through the midfield, and I was very, very critical about trying to play Williams through midfield because I said he's not fit. He's not a midfield fitness type player. Let him play halfback. Use him as a pinch hit midfielder when the game says so. And that's been proven correct because where's he playing now? The so-called $900,000 recruit they've got, he's going to be the saviour through their midfield, but then you put him and Cripps, who are two walkers out of stoppage, their defensive transition is non-existent. And then their loose ball differential, get after the loose footy. Can you read it? Sam Walsh does, but he's got effort. It's no coincidence that he gets after it. They're 15th in the comp. And around stoppage, when you've got a young Pitt and Aide to Conning and sometimes Casbolt, even though you've got Cripps, who's been a fantastic inside midfielder, there's no question about his ability to win inside ball. Once the ball doesn't get hit to him, their other creativity in that middle of the ground is questionable. So they've got some holes to fill. But to get back to your original question, Whitey, it's the sum of the parts. It's just not one.
Mm.
It's got to be an attitudinal shift from every player that represents the Blues Guernsey every time they play. And defensive tackle count is sometimes a barometer that you can measure to say this is what our intent's like to win the ball back. They haven't won the tackle count the last three games they've played when their season's on the line. That's embarrassing.
Maybe you should go for the Carlton job.
Yes.
Gareth, well, there's Carlton and Collingwood
that they both should be giving our man Mickey Maguan a call.
Well, they can register 82 tackles against Melbourne.
Yep.
And they're in the game against what we say is probably the best team
right
now.
You said you don't have a computer, Mick, but you've got all the stats there, and I can see your notebook, and there's not much space there. Your hand would be pretty sore, I would imagine.
Oh, it's preparation for today.
Correct. And that's why you're the best in the business, and I love listening to you talk football. It's 10 to 11. We need to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and preview this weekend's matches here on RSN Central. This is the Footy Fill-Up on this Thursday with Gareth Hall, Mickey Maguan, and Adam White. This is the Footy Fill-Up, Gareth Hall, Adam White, and the great Mickey Maguan with you this morning. Let's preview the matches. Great to have Thursday night football back. It's a little funny with only six matches this weekend, so one match. Is it five or six?
Seven
matches. Well, there you go.
One,
but it's great to have
three, four, five, six, seven.
Yeah. Seven. Well, it's great to have Thursday night football back. Now, Port Adelaide at home $1.80. Geelong with some big ins, including Patrick Dangerfield, Mitch Duncan. They're at $2. But, Mickey, if Geelong were a horse and you looked up their first up record, it would be dreadful.
Yeah, after a bye.
After a bye, yeah. They're legless. In fact, Keilor could probably beat them.
No, I don't know about that.
Do you take that into account?
It'd be something they'd be conscious of, but they'd just ask them players, and Scotty would be asking them to prepare the best they can. Once again, we talk about the style within this game. How will the ballistic ball movement of Port Adelaide hold up against the stringent defence of Geelong? Mm-hmm. Because right now, the last month or so, Geelong have been so difficult to score against, but on the back of winning the ball back, we saw a lot of boring games because they try to build from the back, slow kick mark game, set their defence up behind a turnover if it does happen. I'd love to see both games really attack the game tonight. Then I'll sit down on the couch and I'll enjoy a ripper of a contest. Yep. Because both teams have got capabilities of scoring and scoring quickly and challenge the opposition defences on the back of fast ball movement. And that's what I'm looking forward to see. Does Dangerfield, Dunkley, Blixarves, O'Connor come back in? O'Connor, could he play back? Does he go to midfield to tag like he did in the early stages of the year? There's a lot to play out with a couple of individuals out. Fantasia's a big out as far as I'm concerned. That speed, he's going to be sadly missed. And the other one from a matchup perspective, Tommy Cleary against Jeremy Cameron. And also Tommy Hawkins, yep, are going to miss him as well because he's still in the footy wilderness with his injury. So it'd be really intriguing to see what does transpire there. But the Cats third on the ladder versus Port Adelaide fifth. It's a massive game for both clubs.
All right, I've got a trivia question for both of you.
Looking forward to this.
How many teams have Port Adelaide beaten this year that are currently inside the top eight?
Zero.
No one.
One.
One. Okay. Who was the one?
Richmond.
The Tigers. I bet the Tigers. Yep. 4 points.
In eighth.
Yeah, it was a four.
So in their test this year, they were beaten by Brisbane at the Gabba by 49. They were beaten by West Coast in Perth by 37. They were beaten at home by the Bulldogs by 19. The only other team they've played that is currently in the top eight was Richmond, where they could just fell over the line. It was a good game, but they just fell over the line. So while Ken Hinckley says they don't necessarily need a scalp, I believe they absolutely need a scalp. Mm. And, you know, it's a real test for them. And because that means they've got tough games to come. So they've just got to be a little bit careful, I think, Port Adelaide, because I don't think we've seen them play regularly at the level they did last year. They did it in the first quarter against Fremantle in their last match, where they kicked 7-0 or whatever it was. But I still think there's a big doubt on Port Adelaide. I'm actually really surprised they're staying this game as favourite. I know they're at home, but considering the Cats get back Dangerfield, Duncan, O'Connor and Blitzavs.
And Narkle misses out.
Now, he's either going to be the sub or they're going to make a late change. He can't possibly not be in the top 23 based on what he's been doing with the injuries in recent weeks. Guthrie's really the only one there that you'd say is missing from that midfield mix that makes Geelong better.
This Narkle discussion's really intriguing. I don't think he signed another contract. If I'm at Carlton, if I'm at Collingwood with the Pendlebury side-bottom situation based on age profile, gee, I'd be talking to Quinton Narkle's manager. I'll be on the front foot now before the Perth clubs probably entice him back home.
Yep.
Because that young fella can play. And I know Geelong people thought even last year he's in their best 22 and he got that injury against Brisbane up there in Brisbane when Mitch Duncan and also Narkle went down in the same game. And from that it went a bit pear-shaped for the Cats. But this guy can seriously play, and his numbers over the last 2 weeks when given an opportunity through the middle of the grain have been through the roof.
Are we betting here?
I'm not.
Oh, I'm probably not. Probably will. Hopefully won't. No, look, I think Geelong at even money represent really good value here. They've had 3 wins against top 8 teams this year. I still feel that the Cats' best is arguably the best from what we've seen against West Coast and also against Richmond. Again, 2 top 8 teams, so they've done it against good teams. We just haven't seen it necessarily on a consistent basis. Yep. But I feel that Geelong should be $1.75 here and they're $2.
A few SMSs coming through here about this game. Howdy, guys. I'm a passionate Cats supporter. Surely the most unluckiest bloke is Quinton Narkle. Finally gets his body right, plays a couple of good games and gets the chop. Understandably, Danger, Duncan, Blitz, O'Connor, a walk-up starts. However, would have kept Narkle in and dropped Dalhouse. Narkle could play forward as well. As on the ball, Dalhouse not doing as much. Also think this is why Geelong younger talent leave for better opportunities.
Gee, a long text.
Yeah, it is. That's from Dave.
Yeah, it's pretty thorough, though. He's got some strong merit there.
He makes some really good points,
Dave.
So absolutely. Do you agree with Dave? Would you play Narkle over Dalhouse?
Different types. Yep. Dalhouse is a pressure forward. And I suppose the other part of the conversation, Dave, to add some more complexity to the discussion is Simpson and Myers are not too far away either. Yep. Who can play that small forward, pressure forward role, but also hit the scoreboard. But I'm a huge rap for Narkle, always have been. Just love the way he goes about his footy. And he's just got that anticipation that Carlton need to get onto those loose footies and hunt the ball, something they haven't got. But he's the type of player I'd certainly be investing in.
And I think Brenton's got a text message for you as well, Mika. What has happened to Connor Rosie for Port Adelaide?
Well, he was one of probably 9 players they've had that had surgery at the early start of the year. And to have an interrupted preparation like he has had with the injury that he did sustain early in the year, obviously can set you back a bit. But I think in this last third of the year, I think we'll see the real Connor Rosie start to show. It's all about continuity. Continuity to train, but also to play and get match hardened again. And
Port Adelaide is showing how much they actually do now rely on Butters and to a lesser extent Dersma. He's that, I think, that hardness and that intensity forward of centre that they, you know, you've got the tricks of a lot of those Port Adelaide players. He gives them everything. He's so good, but I reckon they're missing him.
And I know he's young, but Butters is the key to Port when he's back. That's from Pat. And just quickly, O'Connor, who does he go to this week? This is from one of our listeners.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether you might just ease him back into the game and play a part of their back 7. Yeah. That might be the sensible thing to do.
If he was going in the midfield, I think the one that they've got to keep an eye on is Wines. As good as Boak is, I think Wines is so much their fire starter. He's their engine room. He gets others into the game, and he's having an outstanding year.
He's a champion of the game, but Selwood surprised me with how good he has been this year.
Well, his body's good. Yeah. That's why he's good.
Love for him to go head-to-head with Ollie.
Well, there's the comparison, Boak, isn't it? Yeah. Like, you're talking about captains of footy clubs, and you're talking about Carlton's demise, the intensity of Selwood versus the intensity of Doherty. It's chalk and cheese, guys. Yeah. And you wonder why people jump on the back of Joel Selwood. And you wonder why there's passengers still at Carlton. Because it starts at the top. It rots at the head. If you haven't got the right habits in place, it's amazing how people become pick and choosers when it comes to will I go, won't I go.
Sydney Hawthorn Friday Night Football. Sydney $1.15. The Hawks $5.20. We can
pass.
Yeah, go through this game pretty quickly. So we'll move on to the Saturday match. The Dockers $1.90. Gold Coast $1.90. Now, this match is in Perth, but the Dockers have got no players left.
No, they don't. So they've got an injury list of 15, including really important players, and there's no more important than Nathan Fyfe. So that's going to be an issue for the Dockers. Gold Coast, on the other hand, they've got 4 long-termers with knees. Outside of that, they've got 46 to choose from. So they really, in this game, don't have a lot of excuses. Our Gold Coast played West Coast earlier in the year in Perth on a hard deck, and they really worried West Coast with their run, their spread. I think they're right in this game. Maddie, I'm not quite prepared to tip them to win, to put money on them, but in family tipping competitions, and I need to make up some ground, I'm going with Gold Coast.
Hey, Matty Rowe's into $5 now. He was $9 at the start of
well,
the
he's
week
playing.
For the Rising Star, and he is back, Mick.
Yeah, it's great to see a talented young player back who's a competitive beast, wants the foot in his hands, takes responsibility with possession. He leads by example in terms of his actions, how he assaults the footy. he just does a lot right as a young player. And
yep.
I'm really interested to see whether the Gold Coast can actually win back-to-back games. They haven't done it since round 6 and 7. And here's a great opportunity to do so. And it's something good teams can do to justify whether we think they're emerging or evolving as a group. This is the games they have
this,
to win.
This is their Carlton game in a way, like against West Coast, no players there, all their stars out, the Eagles, and they had the chance to beat them. And I know this is at home for the Dockers, but when you have a look at their outs, it's their best players, basically. So it's a big chance for Stewie Jew and his team. What about St Kilda taking on Adelaide?
Who are you picking there, Mickey? Sorry, who are you picking out of Freo, Gold Coast?
I've slightly, because of the outs, I've slightly gone for Gold Coast now. I thought if there was any chance of some of them players getting up and some coming back, the Dockers were a reasonable chance, but they're depleted, and that's probably changed me tip to a degree, but I won't be betting in this game.
All right, then St Kilda $1.85, Adelaide at $1.95. The Saints are coming back to some, well, they're playing some better football now.
We had Brad Crouch on this morning, and he admitted they're confused a bit at the moment. They're not sure where they're tracking because how much of it is not taking their opportunities in front of goal for the control they might be getting in midfield and how much of it is they're just not playing well enough. They've got a lot of concerns with injuries as well and unavailabilities. So he was saying that there could be multiple debutants because players have gone back home for family reasons and they've got the injury concerns, whatever else. So they're not a happy lot at the moment, Mickey, St Kilda, but they might only be one good performance away. I think their season is on the line in this game. They're currently 2 games and percentage outside the top 8. If they can't beat Adelaide, their season's over.
Isn't it funny, Waddy, in some cases, some clubs just tend to have the upper hand on other clubs. And
yeah.
Adelaide's record against St Kilda over the last decade's been quite successful.
Yes. Yep.
And last week when you watched the two teams do battle in 2 different games, it was all about missed opportunities
it
on
was.
Both fronts.
Yep.
Obviously, St Kilda missed their chances, but also Adelaide's second quarter when they dominated Collingwood, they could have been well and truly in front at halftime, and it could have been a different result because of that. So it comes down to, in this game, I think who obviously uses the ball the best and makes the right decisions, something that Adelaide and Matty Nix would have been filthy about some of their decisions and execution of skill, particularly when the game was in the balance. And this is why, in a game of footy, you gravitate to the great players who can make good decisions under pressure and get the result they want. But in Adelaide's case last week, when the game was in the balance, blokes got the footy in areas and they just made poor decisions with either where they went or what they did with it. And that's something that would have been spoken about pretty strongly during the week.
So that game is up there at Cairns. So yep. St Kilda $1.85, Adelaide $1.95. Then we move on to the Sunday match, the Kangaroos 360. Great to hear David Noble on the Breakfast Club this morning. And the Giants at $1.28. The Giants should win this.
I'm surprised at the odds here. I actually thought the Giants would be a bit shorter than that.
Yep.
Toby Green will come back, I think. De Boer also borderline, but likely to come back. North Melbourne will get Tarrant in, maybe Stevenson. But for me, I've actually quite liked and they've surprised me, the Giants, this year. They should be beating North Melbourne.
Got to get their money kick right, the GWS team. That's the only aspect of the game, combined with a bit of turnover influence, how they score from turnover and how they defend turnover, would have been a huge part of their review, I reckon. They re-established their brand the last probably 6 or 7
yep,
weeks
no
about
doubt.
Getting their stoppage and contest.
They've got to start
back.
Better too.
They've got to start well as well, but this is a game they should win.
West Coast take on Richmond. This is probably nearly the match of the round. The Eagles at $2.25, Richmond at $1.65. Now, this match was brought forward because of the situation that we're in. So the Eagles would have loved for this match to be a week later so they could get some troops
right.
back. Richmond get the Eagles at Optus Stadium at the right time, Mick.
Do they what?
Yeah.
How super impressive were the Tigers late against the Bombers? To score 101 points from turnover is just unheard of. You have to go back to 2005 when they beat Carlton to have a higher turnover result within the game of footy.
Have a listen to these stats, Mickey. When Essendon hit the front with 10 minutes gone in the final term, from that moment on, disposals, Richmond 79-38,
yep.
contested possessions 24-16, clearances 11-2, inside 50s 13-4. That's a statement.
It was, and it was more about how they did it.
Yeah.
That's the effort.
Yeah.
That's the template that clubs that are in review right now should be looking at. They're human beings, 2 arms, 2 legs, great mindset, competitive mindset. Game in the balance, lost the lead, find a way. Good clubs do that.
Yeah.
They know how to win. Other clubs, unfortunately, find a way to lose.
Mentally, what does that victory last week do for the Eagles?
Oh, it's great fill-up.
Yep.
A great fill-up against the odds, because a lot of people picked Carlton. And based on the personnel that weren't playing, they introduced some young kids that gave them a sense of enthusiasm. They played with some dare. They trusted what was happening around the footy. But I thought the Carlton coaching staff coached really poorly late in the game when it was in the balance to let Nick Natanui hit the sheet, or Yowie, the two clearance kings on the game. And you have Curnow down back locking down a small forward when he's made a career at lockdown midfielder. You're leaving Sheed just to do what you do. And the other important phase was just the ability to take the ball back off West Coast to allow him for about 2.5 minutes. You can cop 40 seconds, 50 seconds of slow ball, just shifting the ball, yeah, back, double switches, we call them. Use short 45s, go back U-shape, all that sort of stuff to defend with the footy. But for Carlton not to press up and squeeze and pair off in that situation to give him a chance to bail out down the line, which Jones was intercepting the ball really well, and not to encourage the players to do that or the players themselves to drive that on the ground, it was just lacking leadership, it was lacking footy intelligence, and that's the reason why they walked away licking their wounds.
Are we betting here quickly, lads?
Got the impression that Mickey wasn't impressed with Carlton's performance on Sunday.
Oh, it was embarrassing.
Yep.
It's the AFL industry, guys, and this is what happens when you put yourself up for ridicule. You've got to be challenged and some common sense has got to be spoken about.
I think Richmond's the best bet of the weekend.
Okay.
So they'll lose Prestia, but they'll get Lambert back in. But based on Richmond's... everyone keeps talking about their injuries, and they do have them.
Yep.
They've also got 17 premiership players going around at the moment. I just think that with the way that they've been playing, I reckon they're building. The last 2 weeks against Adelaide and Essendon, albeit two teams that aren't in the top eight, they are starting to show glimpses of their best, and I think they'll only get better from here. West Coast, they beat Carlton, but as Mickey said, a lot of that was because of Carlton. I think they've got too many good players out to be able to beat Richmond.
You betting here, Mick?
Oh, they'll be a part of me multi. Yep. I like the Tigers.
All right, Melbourne $1.17 at the SCG on the Queen's birthday on this Monday. Collingwood, can they do it for bucks for the final time at $4.80?
No. They're not good enough to be able to beat Melbourne.
All right, then, Mick.
No, I don't think they can beat the Demons. One thing I think Nathan and his coaching staff will be really trying to address is probably get their six forwards to stay at home and use Melbourne defenders as a starting point to work from. I reckon that's what Brisbane did really well in the first half last week. Go to Lever, wherever he positions himself, you go to him and use that as your starting point to come up at the footy at the leg of the kicker. And they lowered their eyes and they used the ball really well. But also the adjustment in game that Simon Goodwin did, he identified that Lachie Neale was having a huge significance around centre square. He puts arms to him, and I felt Chris Fagan probably missed an opportunity with Robinson not to go to Petraka or Oliver in the same situation. They backed their rotation, they backed their system in, but I think there's still an opportunity to identify who's doing some damage or who's about to do some damage and put down a lockdown defender on a midfielder, on one of their best midfielders, and that didn't happen. And in Collingwood's case, who could do that against Petraka and Oliver? I think they've also got to get that right.
Whitey or Mickey, can you please get Gareth to say Brisbane were beaten? Was beaten
well,
by
you,
a better side.
You were very keen on Brisbane last week.
Melbourne were too good, especially in that second half. And McCluggage is the league's best. Rah, rah, rah.
Yeah.
You make a very good point. Melbourne were far better in the second half, but there's still hope for the Lions. But there's no doubt Melbourne are definitely the side to beat.
Did that sort of dent your confidence a little bit, Gareth?
Correct. then we move on. There's a few SMSs coming through.
A heap of SMSs today.
There's a market open. Clarkson, $3.50. Line, $4.50. Harvey, $7. Mitchell, $8.50, Lepage and Mark Williams, $10, Burns, $12.
If I had $5 spare, I'd put it on Mitchell at $8.50. That's just a gut feel. But to be honest, they've got to go through a process. It's whoever kind of wins the process wins the job, I think. So we'll hear all these names, and they're all going to be really obvious names. Let the process run out.
I've always felt when you've got a length of time to audition, like Robert Harvey has, it's over to him.
It is a little bit. He's sort of dismissed a bit, isn't he?
He has been dismissed, and he's been in the system a long time. Whether he's good enough and he wants it enough, I don't know. But at the end of the day, here's a great opportunity for Banger to get to work and probably sell and put his slant on things. There might be subtle shifts week to week to eventually get to the product that he wants to look at. And this is a great opportunity for Robert Harvey in the view that he's gone to North Melbourne, missed the job. He's had coaching 10 years at Carlton, St Kilda, but also here at Collingwood. So it's a great opportunity, and sometimes you think the person in the chair right now, he's probably the front runner. if things go well, they're hard to remove. Paul Roo's done it.
Well, in recent times, Ratten and
David Teague done it. Yeah. Correct.
Well said, Mickey, regarding Michael Voss. I think he'd be a great coach. That's from Winkers.
Voss isn't in the list.
Scott Burns, Mick.
Well, Burns is another one. Yep. He's done some real serious work in really strong environments, West Coast Eagles, spent some times at Hawthorn, now at the Adelaide Crows. So
former captain.
Former skipper, yep. Great integrity, great competitor, brings a hard edge to the group because of the way he played, softly spoken type of guy, but clearly gets his message across.
Love your work, lads. Thanks for that, Mickey.
Good on you, boys. Good luck, staking plans.
Oh, staking plans. Sorry.
We're doing well. We're doing well.
You are flying. How dare I forget that? I'm keen for Mickey to sign as the assistant coach for Carlton.
Then we don't have him on the show next year.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to go three teams, boys, just head-to-head and cop 6-4 of my money. GWS into Richmond, into Melbourne. Pretty simple.
I've got the same bet.
Okay.
I actually have got the same bet. If you want to throw Sydney in as well, you get 284. And then a possession bet for tonight, Boak, Duncan, Selwood and Houston. So Boak 25, Duncan 25, Selwood and Houston 20 each. That'll get you 6-4.
Love your work, Mickey. And Adam, enjoy your day.
I'll try my best.
Looking forward to tonight. How good's that? Thursday night football. Two great sides. The Cats taking on the Power.
You'll be watching the greyhounds, Gareth.
Yeah, in between Sandown and, of course, a little bit of Thursday night football at the Adelaide Oval. Good on